do.
Follow the money.
That's what I always say. You always follow the money.
Yeah.
This is Follow the Money with Mitch Moss and Pauly Howard on VSiN.
Mitch and Pauly getting some time off post-Super Bowl. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel holding down the fort for you. Still live, though, in downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino, hanging out with you for the next 3 hours. So much we're going to get into. A few great guests on deck as well, beginning about 30 minutes. We're going to have Greg Hoops Peterson join the program with some of his favorite college basketball plays for the day. Early look ahead to the weekend as well. Jensen Lewis, who we have on, he's going to talk plenty of Major League Baseball. Former MLB pitcher, of course, host of VSiN by the Books here at the network. We're going to talk baseball. It's also opening day for the college baseball season, but he's locked and loaded with a bunch of under the radar college hoops bets that I did not anticipate. And Nick Giffen later on in hour three as well, with the Daytona 500 upon us this weekend. He does a great job covering all things racing for Action Network. Get into that. But JVT, we start the show today with a handful of sweats going on right now on the Olympic ice on both the men's and women's side. I have a couple of bets. I took both the +7 goals on principal for the Italian women today against Team USA, which has been very stressful already just in the first period, as Team USA has outshot the Italians 20-2 to this point, but just one goal led into this point. I also laid 2.5 on the puck line with Team Canada, who's up 2-1 after one against Switzerland.
Yep, and for another, anyways, it feels like the third or second day in a row here, a live hockey bet for me when it comes to the American women this time around, -5.5 today. I just shot 200 milligrams of caffeine, and now we got a live bet on Olympic women's hockey. So I am fired up and ready to go. We could both be happy. You land on 6, and we're absolutely golden.
Let's see
if we can get this done here today.
This is so funny, too. We were just talking about it before we came on air. The final closing numbers for this game, Team USA laying 7.5 on the puck line. Yep. The full total for the game ended up closing 7.5 as well. That's the expectation for this thing. I was texting you earlier, too, saying, oh, man, I'm not feeling so good about taking the 7 after I saw an article this morning breaking down how they thought that Team USA was going to put up double-digit goals today. So still a long way to go in this one. And, again, like the shot share dominance that Team USA has, they're going
to win gold
this year. Yeah, but the Italians are – the home country is being plucky, JVT.
They are, at least when it comes to their net minding. So we'll see if maybe the women can break this year. Be very much enjoyable for that. So I'm sorry. You know, generally I'm a pretty focused and straight-lined, low-energy individual that's ready to go and is never distracting for this show in any way, shape, or form. Today, I might be a little different.
You're never distracted. The Italian goalie, Francesca Durante, nails. We'll see if she can keep it up. I know you certainly are hoping not so much.
I hope she gets smoked. I hope today is the worst day of her life, to be honest with you.
Megan Keller with the lone goal for the Americans.
The recent purchase.
We also, just to update you on who did the scoring in the Canadian-Switzerland game on the men's side, with Canada up 2-1 right now. First goal goes to Connor McDavid. So only a +140 anytime goal scorer. But if you are somebody that likes to dive into those first goal markets, nearly 10-1 for a first goal on the best player in the world. Thomas Harley with the second goal for Canada at 12-1. Suter with the lone goal for Switzerland at 6-1 as well, for anytime goals for the two of them. So some more under the radar players with both of these rosters, and most notably, of course, Canada loaded with stars, that you're able to get some value on some of these anytime goal scorers. Canada closed a -750 money line favorite. I mentioned 2.5 on the puck line here. Goal total for the game, 5.5. And I'm kicking myself because I thought about betting the full game over in this one. I thought it would be like a 6-2 type final in favor of Canada. Already 3 goals scored here early. Did you do anything in this game? I can't remember.
No, I did not. You're going, dude. Keep rolling.
Sorry,
you're fine.
I'm like, I'm doing a lot of talking right now.
Yeah. I mean, Stormy's obviously very fired up about this. She likes hockey a lot. The Olympic hockey has been kind of her thing to this point. By the way, we're back on the ice between the Italians and the Americans. But no, I mean, you keep going. I mean, if you've got something here. But if you're going to ask me, did you have anything in the Olympic hockey game? The answer more often than not is no. Outside of watching these games and seeing the Italian women get completely dominated, and hopefully that continues to the point where the goals come. So if you want to ask the question, the answer is no. Absolutely not.
Well, I've got a couple other things for you, because I am one of our hockey people here at the network, typically more NHL focused. I do some ringside reporting. I used to be a ringside reporter for the Vegas Golden Knights. I do that now for ESPN when we get to the closer to the postseason in the playoff time. But here with the Olympics, this is so fun. It's the first time since I have been covering the sport that we have NHL players involved in it. So I've been very invested. Also, what cashed in that first period for the men, the Canadian men over 1.5 goals for the first period comes through through at plus 165. Switzerland to score a goal, plus 125. Both teams to score, plus 205. We also had some interesting results from this morning, JVT, which has created some intrigue for a group bet that I placed prior to tournament action. I bet Finland at plus 140 to win the group. Sweden was your favorite. Slovakia, all of a sudden, leader in the clubhouse in the standings right now, who is a 16-1 shot in Group B. They have two wins to be at the top of the standings. The two games tomorrow now will decide who ends up where, because Finland got a big win over Sweden, 4-1 today. Sweden's lone goal, however, Rasmus Dahlin, which...
No way.
Swear. On the power play. Oh, no. I know. I thought you would care because I bet the over 4.5 points.
Oh, that's right. What do you have? Four?
Four now.
There you go.
The
okay.
lone goal for Sweden. He scored on the power play.
Team USA. Let's go. Roll. Come on. Okay. All right. 2-0.
Oh, another one. Okay.
Yep.
I was hoping we could hold off at least like five minutes maybe before.
Let's go, girls. Goalier. Get this thing done.
2-0. Team USA up. Once I get a better idea of how that transpired, I'll update you on it.
I believe we're at, now I can actually see the box score even though it is far away. I believe we're at 23 shots to 2, and they're up 2-0 right now. This has to get ugly, correct?
Well, yeah, we talked about the shot differential, and it just like the Durante has been stretching out unbelievable save after save after save in this thing. So you knew that the dam was going to break. Hopefully it just doesn't get out of hand here for the sake of my portion of the bet. Again, +7 goals for me. My thought was even if it was a 7-0 shutout, I could still get a push.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
I like how you're getting all negative. It's only 2-0. You got plenty of time.
I think in like most areas of life, I'm a very positive poly, optimistic type of a person. With betting, not a freaking chance. I am always like the person that even when you're watching the NFL, something good happens, I'm like, where's the flag? Inevitably something bad's gonna happen. I feel that way watching hockey. Okay, we're gonna get a penalty here. Inevitably, there. What did I say earlier when Italy was on the power play? I got excited for 2 seconds about them being on the power play. What happens? USA scores a shorthanded goal. So that's why.
Just gotta live life like me. Sun's always shining. Wherever I'm looking, Stormy.
The point I bring up, though, real quickly about Group B on the men's side, tomorrow Slovakia is a 2.5 puck line dog to Sweden. Finland is a 4.5 puck line favorite to Italy. And there is a world with which we have a 3-team tie at the top and goal differential is going to come into play. So my plus 140 on Finland is not dead yet. And I'm very excited about it. Although, if you are somebody that took a shot on Slovakia, good on you. We thought the favorites were going to kind of... three groups?
Obviously, the markets were kind of priced like that. Outside of what? Was it Group B
Was shorter? It was just Group B that wasn't. Sweden was the shortest favorite of the group, but they haven't really played particularly well. The Czech Republic bounced back easily as they should have as a minus 1,800 favorite against France today. Although it got dicey for a minute, France was down 2-0 after the first, but they went on to score 3 goals in 4 minutes to take a lead. And you're like, oh my gosh, is this team actually going to do something competitive? Czech Republic ended up pulling away. The women's hockey unders, though, 17-4 so far in the tournament. Is that a trend that we think can continue?
I mean, what would be the logic behind it? Are you playing tighter because it's the Olympics? I mean, I guess I would kind of...
blowouts.
I mean, that too, I guess. Because I would buy it if you're talking about, you know, playing a little bit tighter. Obviously, it's group elimination, so maybe you're not taking as many chances if you're some of these teams, but you're not getting eliminated, so... I don't know, unless it's just a blip on the radar, I would want to look for something that would maybe tie into style of play or the way these games are going outside of, hey, just a few of these games have gone under the total. And you said it's just women's, right?
Yes, women's 17-4 to the under at this point. We're about to get underway in the second period of that men's game for Canada and Switzerland.
They've played 21 games already?
Yeah, well, the women have more on their side, so they play 4 games in the preliminary round, whereas the men only play 3.
Gotcha.
2-0 USA over Italy right now, and we're about to drop the puck in the second period of the Canadian-Switzerland.
I have not paid attention.
How much have you been keeping tabs on the Pebble Beach, though, out there in California?
A little bit. I was watching a little bit yesterday. Obviously, we talked a little bit more about this in the top of the leaderboard of what that looked like. I did jump in. We talked about Rory McIlroy yesterday and the fact that his putter had kind of let him down, but every aspect of his game from strokes gained, approach around the green, all of that looked like it was actually pretty solid. So I did take a little piece of Rory McIlroy to win this thing. He's having a really good day. He's through 9, he's 4 under, he's 8 under for the tournament. The problem is everybody else has been absolutely brilliant at this point right now. Akshay Bhatia right now sitting at 7 under for the day, 14 under for the tournament. Second shot, Ricky Fowler at 13 under and 7 under for the day. So a lot of low scores getting posted, but Rory's still only halfway through. So I'm hoping he can make a little bit of a push here, but did add Rory McIlroy at 11-1 to win this thing. So does this count? Okay. Am I back on my, what's the word I'm looking for? What do you do with the New Year's resolution? Am I back on the resolution?
No, because okay. It wasn't a pre-tournament wager.
What? So, that doesn't count. I just said I would bet on every tournament.
You said
I did not say every tournament before it started. I said I would bet on every tournament.
Look at you with your loopholes. Did you actually, when you were going to school, were you training to be a lawyer or a journalist? What was that?
I mean, you know, journalists read words and understand them and interpret them. And I think I never said that I would do that before the tournament started. I said I would just bet everyone.
I don't like the energy. I feel like there's a lot of negativity coming out of you. Meanwhile, Ryo Hisatsune is the one that cashes your first round leader. I was looking into some of the numbers for him. I'm surprised more people didn't post this. Usually you see a DraftKings sportsbook or an action, whatever, on their social media page posting what the first round leader cashed at.
Yeah.
It took me so long to find it. But for him specifically, 66-1 was in some places as high as 200-1 as a pre-tournament favorite. He's still up there pretty high on the odds board. So see if he can hang on. The putter gained more than 5 strokes on the field, hold
Give
more than
me,
150
bro.
Feet of putts.
I think we got a third goal here.
No!
Yes, we do. 3-0.
I'm
Let's
not
go, ladies.
Nux for a
Come
bet
on.
That is anti my bet.
You're still
no,
fine.
We need low scoring. Slow down, America. I can't take this right now.
That is not something America does. Okay.
Okay. Sorry. My
it's always forward for the Americans.
Yeah, yeah,
Let's
yeah.
go.
Okay. We got to
manifest destiny, brother. Let's go.
You're the worst. We got to take our first time out of the day. When we come back, we will obviously continue to update you on all things Olympic hockey, men's and women's portion of this thing throughout the course of the show, but also a lot of intrigue when it comes to the NBA, some results yesterday. Also, obviously, All-Star Week is getting underway. So much more to come, but that is where we will start next year on Follow the Money.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Team USA still up 5-0 on the Italian women as we are keeping tabs on all things Olympic hockey this morning while we are patriotic and excited for Team USA playing as well as they are. Someone who took 7 goals, also a little bit frustrated, hesitant, but I knew this was going to be a tough sweat throughout the course of the game. And it was funny talking to our next guest, Greg Hoops Peterson, who joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, host of the Coast to Coast Hoops podcast. Of course, you can find all of the daily write-ups up on VSiN.com. Greg was saying, this is just one of those games that you hold your nose, it's an ugly dog, and you're already looking ahead to a couple of those on the college basketball card for tomorrow, Greg.
Absolutely. I'm waiting to see what this St. Thomas versus UMKC, aka Kansas City line, is going to be, because Kansas City, with their non-cover yesterday, they are the worst team against the spread in all of college basketball. I saw St. Thomas be a double-figure favorite in a few spots on the road. I'm hoping we could get like 15 to 16 points, so that way I could take me some ugly underdogs, because they typically are very profitable this time of year in college basketball.
That's it? You don't want to follow up? You loved that.
I love the idea of the Kansas City Kangaroos being a program that exists, period, okay. Greg.
Yes, one of the best mascots out there.
All right, let's go. Let's go with a couple of games today. I know Stormy's chopping at the bit to get down to this. I think it's an interesting situation. George Mason on the road against George Washington, Greg. George Washington, like 2.5-point favorite, total 149.5. What do we make of what the Revolutionaries have in store at home today?
Absolutely. I took George in this spot. Yep. George Mason. I like George Mason on the money line. This has been a very rock solid defense, top 65 team in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And obviously the joke is they're both named George. But that said, for George Washington, the big thing for them is that they've been sloppy with the ball. They're outside the top 175. terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. They're very strong down low. Like, I love Rafael Castro. He's able to give you 15 plus points, 9 plus rebounds per game. They've got good all around rebounding, but with George Mason, they've actually been a more efficient offense away from him. Their 3-point shooting percentage goes above 34% away from him compared to 32.3% at home. And they're a top 35 team in terms of fewest turnovers on a per possession basis when they're away from home as well. I think that that's going to serve them well. With that, they love to slow games down. George Mason, bottom 35 team in terms of total possessions per game. George Washington is looking to gun it a little bit more. That total of 150, I like the under, and I do think that George Mason gets their tempo and wins this game on the money line.
Another short spread, but a nationally ranked team in here. Michigan State laying 1.5 at Wisconsin. Both of these teams' most recent games, coincidentally, overtime wins over Illinois. Wisconsin, though, could this be a potential letdown spot for them even at home? What's the general feel for tonight?
Yep, and I'm not going to make a lot of people from my home state of Wisconsin app here, but I'm going to be willing to lay with Michigan State, mainly because this Michigan State defense is one of the best at traveling in all of college basketball, third in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis, when they're away from the Breslin Center. And for Michigan State, you are not going to get second chances against them. Teams grab 19.2% of their missed shots as an offensive rebound against them. That is number one in all of college basketball. Now, Wisconsin's not bad in this aspect as well. They're 26th in terms of defensive rebound percentage. So that total of 148, I like the under, but something else that works in Michigan State's favor is that they've got one of the most wonky home and road 3-point shooting splits that you're going to find. They shoot 31.3% from 3-point range at home, about 39.8/39.9% away from home. One of the biggest ones in all of college basketball. And I do think that that irons out sooner rather than later, but Wisconsin hasn't been the best with regards to their perimeter defense. It's a Michigan State team that doesn't give you good looks on the inside as well. And they're a top 50 team in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage. That's big because Wisconsin takes 50.8% of their shots from 3-point range. That is 15th in the country. Think that Michigan State puts clamps down on defense, like the under, and Michigan State lay in the two.
All right, Miami, Ohio, they continue to win games. They're not covering as consistently, Greg. What do we make of this spot here against Ohio? 9.5, total of 165.
And Ohio is typically one of the better teams out there in the MAC. Like, go back a few years ago when they were able to knock off Virginia in the NCAA tournament. Heck, they very nearly made the Elite Eight about a decade or so ago as well. This is not your father's Ohio team, though. Out of 365 Division I teams, they're a bottom 35 team in terms of 3-point shooting percentage, and they're 315th in terms of 3-point shooting defense. Meanwhile, you've got a Miami of Ohio team that they're 27th in the country with their 3-point shooting percentage. But let's say that they're having an off shooting night where they go into a little bit of a lull. What makes this seem so dangerous on offense? They're also second in the country with their 2-point shooting percentage. For Miami of Ohio, the way that you want to beat them is down low. And you really don't have that with Ohio. Only have one guy that gives you over 5.5 rebounds per game at Aiden Hathaway. They're outside the top 230 in terms of offensive rebound percentage. So the one main weakness that you've got for Miami of Ohio is that could be exposed. Meanwhile, Ohio, all sorts of awful from the perimeter. Miami of Ohio is a much better team in terms of both generating turnovers and taking care of the ball on offense. I set my line at a 15. I've been finding value on Miami of Ohio all season long, and I find it once again here. So one to lay with Miami of Ohio, and that total of 165, starting to get to a little bit of a point of no return. Bet the over when this was more around 161.5, 162. Think that we've gone just a touch too far for me to advise it.
College basketball analyst here at VSiN, Greg Peterson, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. Follow-up question on Miami of Ohio. I know their season has been great. You mentioned, like, undefeated, the run that they've been on, all these things. But with a strength of schedule at around 350th in the country, do they still need to, like, if they trip up and lose a game in the regular season, do they still need to win the tournament ultimately to get into the NCAA tournament? How do you view their feel for getting in?
Whew, that is going to be tough, because if you've got like a 1 or 2 loss Miami of Ohio team, I think that there's going to be a lot of mutiny and outrage if you leave them out of the NCAA tournament picture. But we have seen the selection committee not give the benefit of the doubt to the mid-majors. That's as politely as I can put it. I was going to use something a little bit more vulgar, but not give the benefit of the doubt, I think, is the best way of putting it. I think that they can afford one regular season loss and one only. And I think that that might come against Bowling Green here in a week or two. I actually really like that Bowling Green team. Todd Simon always has his team up for big games. So that could be a little bit of trip-off spot. But for Miami of Ohio, I think they get one mulligan and that's it.
I didn't think you were capable of vulgarities, Greg.
It's very, very rare. I when you get mid-major basketball involved, I get very, very heated because I want to defend these guys. I want these guys to make runs in the NCAA tournament. So we always have to stand for these mid-major teams, being a D3 university graduate myself.
All right. And I just wanted to make sure because I know that you're a very sweet man. All right. 18.5, total 155.5. That is a line for St. Louis and Loyola Chicago. What do we got with SLU here today on the road?
I personally was able to find a 19.5 on Loyola Chicago. This is just like Stormy's ugly underdog play with Loyola Chicago. It's bad. Like, it's really bad. In a year that's supposed to honor Sister Jean, they have been anything but honorable. They have been rough straight up. They have been rough against the spread. They've been bad on offense. They've been bad on defense. That said, since Xavier Amos has gotten back for this team, they've been a little bit more respectable there. And if there is one thing that St. Louis does, they are outside the top 150 in terms of turnovers on a per possession basis. Now, St. Louis is not losing this game outright. I would not advise like some sort of money line sprinkle here, but I think Loyola Chicago, if you can find like a 19 plus on them, there might be a little bit of value here, mainly because you might not just get enough possessions to be able to cover this sort of a number for St. Louis. Loyola Chicago outside the top 310 in terms of total possessions per game. They do a relatively good job with their low post play as well. Top 130 team in terms of opponent's 2-point shooting percentage. Miles Rubin is able to give you 2+ blocks per contest. So I took a very, very, very ugly stab here on Loyola Chicago, and I'm not feeling great about it, but you know what? It was just too many points for me to turn down.
Okay, I'm not particularly enjoying that handicap. As someone who was looking on some angles to buy on St. Louis and the points, I took their first half points to like team total over. So the thought on the possessions thing is kind of throwing me for a loop here. You're looking at the TV. Did USA score again? No.
They did.
Oh, come on!
6-0.
Okay, let's get one more game, Greg, before we get out of here, and I want to die. It's right before the freaking period ends, too. There's like a minute to go. Another program that people are around the country are going to be familiar with, at least based on recent, relatively recent NCAA tournament experience. St. Peter's Peacocks taking on Sacred Heart tonight. What do you like?
Absolutely. Give me the under in what I think is going to be a slog of a game. And man, out there in the Metro Atlantic, if you are a lover of games that are just absolutely dreadful in terms of offense, this is a conference for you. Got a lot of the slowest teams in all of college basketball here. And for St. Peter's, they're once again very slowly. They're outside the top 300 in terms of total possessions per game, and they reduce on the amount of clean possessions even further by being 22nd in the country in terms of turnovers generated on a per possession basis. Now you've got a Sacred Heart team that's pretty dreadful on defense. They're about 300th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but not particularly fast, about 195th in terms of total possessions per game. And additionally, for the Sacred Heart team, they are facing off against the St. Peter's bunch that's outside the top 320 with regards to 2-point shooting percentage away from them and 340th in terms of 3-point shooting percentage. Total of 148, just too high for me. I'm in on the under.
Greg, you're awesome. Thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. Good luck with the plays.
See you, bud.
Always fun, you guys. Thank you.
Sorry that you had to deal with my personality on display this way whilst watching a game. Greg Peterson, make sure you check out the Coast to Coast Hoops podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Also, that was just the tip of the iceberg for Greg's plays today. If you go to vsin.com, you can get access to every single one of the bets he has on the card, as well as a daily spreadsheet where he puts his handicap spread on and total available on all of them. I just cannot believe this is happening to me. Actually, I can believe it. I can believe it. This bet is toast. Win some, lose some. Coming up after this, I'm a loser, baby. So why don't you kill me?
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
The panic officially setting in. Team USA up 6-0 right now over Italy. Shot differential 42-5. This is the perfect final score for JVT and I. JVT laid a 5.5 goals with Team USA live. I took 7 goals with the Italians.
Not
pre-flop. 9:30 to go. So prayers up for your girl. Meanwhile, Team Canada did extend their lead 4-1 over Switzerland. Mitch Marner to Sid the Kid. They're in the third period. So 4-1. They're covering the 2.5 goals right now. 12:32 to go in that one. As we get into some college basketball, college baseball is today's opening day. Major League Baseball is right upon us as well. Jensen Lewis joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, host of course of VSiN by the Book, 7 to 10 Eastern each and every weekday here on the network. You are joining forces with Adam Burke to put together our MLB betting guide. Jensen, what has that experience been like? How are you doing?
Back to the college days, Stormy and JVT. Most writing I think I've done in a two-week timeline. JVT, I'm sure, can sympathize doing it for the betting guides on the basketball side. But excited to get it out. And as you guys know, when you get it on deadline, of course, a boatload of moves happen right after you submit everything. So we are going to have some of those, at least on my side, that will be dated by the time it comes out on the 17th. But all in all, always a great thing to do and kind of get primed and some angles for people to be able to leverage not only for season-long props, but also for some win totals as well.
As Adam Burke can attest, I've never met a deadline that I can't make. So let's see if I'm sure he had a better time working with you. Let's say
he forgot his final score prediction for the Super Bowl. He didn't. That's all you had to do was just the final score prediction. Come on, man. Anyways, go ahead.
All right. What was your favorite thing to write about? What was the thing that when you latched onto it, when you saw it, what's a nugget that you can give our audience that look forward to in the guide?
Yeah, JVT, when you look at when the win totals come out, I'm not usually a person that will bet them right away, because usually when you get to camp, you start to see injuries and also ones that are kind of under the radar that all of a sudden come up in the first week once reporters get there. So I think the Hamate stuff, and I'm sure you guys have touched on it throughout the week, is really significant when you look at some of the player props. When I was writing up the Arizona Diamondbacks, one of my bold takes was that Corbin Carroll would finish top three in the MVP voting. That's not going to be the case anymore. So for me and for people that don't realize it, it's not just the recovery timeline to get back to play. It's the significant loss of power and the slug ability for probably half the season, if not upwards of the entire year. So that really drastically affects at least my handicap of when you're looking at, you know, season total home runs, if you're looking at guys that are going to be in the awards markets too. So that was one that stood out. I'm not as worried about Francisco Lindor. I think they knew it early on. It was just a matter of, did he want to try and play through it, or was it smarter to knock it out? It sounds like he's not going to miss the amount of time that maybe a Jackson Holiday would. So I would say Arizona is an intriguing team. I like the Giants in the West. I think Stormy San Francisco guys are going to really be much better under Tony Vitello. The jump from college into the professional ranks, I think he's going to get acclimated much quicker than maybe the outside critics will look at. So I think the Giants could surprise, and I really like their rotation as well as the additions in their lineup. I'd say the American League, and I'll stay in the Central, guys. I think the White Sox over on their win total. I think they're going to be much better under Will Venable in year two. Mutataki Murakami, I think, is the real deal, and the power could be there as well. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a 30-plus home run guy and squarely in the Rookie of the Year voting there on the American League side. So maybe the teams designated as the worst or the bottom of the barrel, I think there is some value of playing some of those win totals over that look very, very diffused at the moment.
I'm curious, Jensen, to go back really quickly to Tony Vitello, who comes in for San Francisco. The dynamic of coming from college to the pros in the NFL, we talk about it all the time about, hey, you know, you have dominion over these kids and you get to, hey, it's my way or the highway. And it's a way different dynamic when you're talking about millionaires. But the sport is obviously different, and in baseball, it's a little bit more cerebral. You're making choices. Does that transition from college to pros maybe make it a little bit easier for a baseball manager than a football coach?
I think what's unique, JVT, and had a chance to cover Tennessee a handful of times this past year, he is so intense. And that, to me, is the differential of this year and kind of the trial of a six-month marathon. You're not going to be able to have that intensity day in and day out. And you're right to highlight, these are way different personalities, multimillionaires. These guys, it's their own career. They don't need a manager kind of telling them what to do and what not to do. So I think his attention to detail is really going to catch a lot of those guys in a positive way. He is really going to drill down on the fundamentals. It was a hallmark for him at the University of Tennessee. They're a really fundamentally sound team defensively. They hit an absolute boatload of home runs. I think he's going to infuse not only the youth there, and we're kind of seeing it now, Stephen Vogt in Cleveland here the last couple of years. You're going to see it with Butera there in D.C., although I think the Nationals are not anywhere near a contending window here, at least this season and next. But that youth movement in that managerial seat, Skip Schumacher, I think it's going to be phenomenal with the Rangers. A lot of respect around the league. He got to learn under Bruce Bochy. So it's about surrounding yourself with a great staff. Tony Vitello has done that. I think the Giants can surprise out there in the National League West.
as your boy Dave Ross likes to say, our closer, Jensen Lewis, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line, host of VSiN by the Books. You can follow him on X at JLew50. That is the word 50 spelled out. We'll get to college baseball in a minute before we let you go, but I know you've got a ton of college basketball plays today, and I couldn't help but, I mean, all of them are essentially on totals. Have you found that totals has been a more profitable way for you to go this season? What's the angle there and your favorite play of the day?
Stormy, this has been the worst for me in basketball. I can't hit water falling out of a boat right now. So if you want to just fade me, that may be the profitable way to go right now. But we hit a nice outright on the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday over the Thunder. And then transitioning to, as I said with Dave this morning, the Smarty Pants plays here. A lot of Ivy League trends that kind of surface for us. Looking at a couple of them, and speaking of those totals, some unders, teams that have been really good to the under here. Looking at Cornell in their games, they've been very, very solid to the under. Also looking at UPenn there as they host Columbia. So this is such a unique slate because it is kind of like under the radar as far as just the handful of ranked games. Obviously, Michigan State at St. Louis there and Miami of Ohio. That is the one over that I have tonight. The Red Hawks there in my neck of the woods here in the state of Ohio, they will take on the Ohio Bobcats. I do like the over. I bought a couple of points here. I got it to 161.5. I think it's upwards of 164 right now. But I think that's the unique part about where we are in this college calendar is that, I mean, it's really sweaty for the totals, but I got to catch some lightning in a bottle. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to pay for a vacation with Michelle when we leave tomorrow.
I like it. All right. Well, college baseball opening day coming up here. So what should we know? I know we have a big matchup in terms of the top 25 teams that you might be familiar with.
My Commodores just tied it up right now. I got the live stats up as I'm talking with you guys. They are in the Shriners College Children's Classic. Down at the ballpark at Arlington or Globe Life Field, their home of the Rangers. Really a unique setup in college baseball, guys, and we see it similarly in college basketball. Early season tournaments, you know, getting a lot of these colder weather teams that will come south and be able to play in some of these controlled environments. Also out in Surprise, Arizona, a great amount of talent out there. We'll see a team in Arizona that I covered in the Super Regionals in Chapel Hill. They're out there the late game. But what I really like, and as an SEC guy, I think we get a bounce back this year, guys, from the Southeastern Conference. They really took it on the chin. My Vandy boys, number one overall seed, could not even get to their regional final in the Nashville regional last year. An embarrassment to say the least for Tim Corbin and that crew. They're going to try and get back there with a boatload of great arms. It's kind of been a pipeline and a foundation for them. I think Arkansas is loaded for bear.
Oh no!
I think Jensen froze up a little bit there, but I love the approach though that this is going to be an up year once again for the SEC once we get to Omaha. And our whole crew had the pleasure of going out to Charles Schwab Field last year. Spent the weekend in Omaha, which was a finish your thought on Arkansas and some others, Jensen. I heard we got you back.
I think Dave Van Horn tried to freeze my feed as I was saying I really like them, but usually Arkansas will find a way to beat themselves. And you know, when you've got the likes of the defending champs in LSU, Texas is going to be up there as well. We had Noah Beanick of the College Baseball Insiders on with us live from Arlington this morning, and he likes the Longhorns as his top play to win it all. He also brought up Kentucky as a 45-1 shot, and I think the Wildcats will surprise some people not only with their rotation, but they've got a nice balance of their offense. If I'm looking any further, a team that I had in the Athens regional, guys, Georgia already off and rolling. They call it feeding the trees out there. It's one of the most prestigious venues, but also one of the most ridiculous power spots. It's like Yankee Stadium, but on a college environment out there to right field. So I think Georgia, they were the best in the transfer portal, guys, this offseason. They brought in a boatload of talent on both sides of the ball. So I think the Bulldogs going to be heard from here late into the postseason.
I'm about it. The road to Omaha starts now, Jensen. Thank you so much. We appreciate the time.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Jensen Lewis, everybody. Great to note as well throughout the MLB and college baseball season, Jensen's going to join us on Money Moves each and every week, talking through some different things and talking about Omaha and everything. He mentioned covering Super Regional last year. He has a great job in the postseason with ESPN calling games. So he's very close to the college sport. You hear that music? We got to step aside here real quickly as we sweat out the final 4 minutes of this USA Italy game. Still 6-0 right now. And Canada extends their lead out 5-1 on a Nathan MacKinnon goal. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
This is Follow the Money on VSiN.
Last week, the Super Bowl in the NFL. This week, the Super Bowl of stock car racing. As we welcome you back to Follow the Money on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, SiriusXM Channel 158. Stormy Bonantoni, Jonathan Von Tobel with you. The 68th running of the Great American Race on deck this weekend, the Daytona 500. To help us break it all down, very excited to welcome in Nick Giffen on the Progressive Guest Line, NASCAR and predictive analyst over at Action Network, host of both the Running Hot and Stacking Denny's podcast. You can follow him on X at RotoDoc. Welcome in, Nick. How pumped are you for the weekend?
Oh, I'm so excited. NASCAR is back. And as a kid growing up in Virginia, North Carolina is the hotbed of NASCAR, right? That was what I watched growing up. So it's my favorite sport. And I'm excited that we get to have the Super Bowl of stock car racing right off the bat.
Yes. And before we get into some of the racers that you really like this weekend, some of the bets, for anybody who maybe hasn't bet motorsports in general before, is there anything that you can share, just a general rule of thumb that you have, advice you have for betting an event like this, the markets that are available? What can you give us?
Yeah, so there's a few different markets. Obviously, there's the outright or to win market, and that's betting on the driver to win the race. It's very difficult because almost every single driver of the 41 car field can win this race because of the style of racing we have here. So for a little bit of leeway, you could bet on them to finish in the top three or the top five or the top 10, kind of like in a golf tournament. Additionally, there are three manufacturers, Chevy, Ford, and Toyota. You could bet on a driver to finish as the top driver in his manufacturer, right? So there's 11 Toyota cars entered. You'd be betting on that driver to beat the other 10 Toyota cars. And there's head-to-head matchups. There's group matchups. There's props like the number of cautions over under, all sorts of markets. But the main thing to know about the Daytona 500 is chaos reigns supreme. Every driver wants to win the Daytona 500. They're going to push each other like crazy and all in one big pack from the draft. It could take out 20 cars in one wreck. So you do want to sprinkle some long shots in here because long shots do win the Daytona 500.
Okay, so that was kind of the question that I was going to ask. Let me ask a general question then about handicapping NASCAR before we get to the specifics of this race. Does it tend to be a top-heavy sport when you look at the betting odds for the other races outside of ones like this?
Absolutely, yeah. When you're outside of drafting track races, very top-heavy. The guys like Kyle Larson or William Byron, they'll be dominating a lot of these races. Your Denny Hamlins. So you'll naturally find them like anywhere from 3-1 to maybe 7-1 as the race favorite. Well, here the race favorite is double digits, right? 10-1 or 12-1 at some books is the race favorite. That just goes to show the level of chaos here.
All right, well, let's get into some of the plays then. Who is, I guess, your favorite driver that you've backed going into this weekend?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Ryan Preece of Roush Fenway Keselowski Racing to win the race. Odds are actually, funny enough, they're down right now because NASCAR is on track practicing for the Cup Series. But when they come back up, I've seen 25. I've seen even longer than 25-1 out there. My model has them just shy of 22-1 as fair value, meaning around 4.4%. win probability. And I like Preece because that RFK equipment that he is in, that Ford that he is in, they have been so strong. They push in the draft very well. If you can push really well in the draft, you can push other cars towards the front, which means you naturally go to the front with them. And then all you have to do is make one or two other passes to take the lead. And Ryan Preece has been very strong at super speedways. He had a second place finish one of the super speedways last year. So I look for him to do one spot better this year.
You know, I wanted to build on something because you mentioned it, your model. What are some of the important statistics in NASCAR that handicappers should be looking at? Where can you find them?
Yeah, NASCAR produces something every race called loop data statistics. And they have things like a driver rating. Think of it like passer rating or QB rating for NFL. There's laps led, fastest laps. So you can get all of these things. Those are kind of more dominator performance, which we'd use at some of the standard tracks, but at the drafting tracks, because everything is so random, you kind of just want to look at their average running position. Where are they running in the pack on average? And that'll give you a good idea if they're more likely to finish further forward or finish further backward, because predicting the finish here is next to impossible. You just want to try to do good enough. You know what I mean? So that's the data I tend to look at.
Nick Giffen of Action Network joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line. And a question that was at least top of my mind going into the Daytona 500 was, will either of the Kyles finally get the win here? Kyle Larson, 16-1 before those odds went off the board, defending Cup Series champ, but has struggled at Daytona, zero top five finishes in his career here. And then our guy here in Vegas, and I see you with the Golden Knights hat on, so Vegas tie here, our guy from the 702, 0-20 career at the Daytona 500, but he won the pole Wednesday night. He's come close a couple of times. Could he be in contention? Could this be the year?
It really could be the year for Kyle Busch. I think Kyle Larson, he has been improving at these drafting tracks, but he still has never yet to be the guy. Whereas in the past, Kyle Busch has been the guy at drafting tracks, whether it's Talladega or the summer Daytona race, but he's just never won the spring Daytona race, the Daytona 500. It hasn't worked out, but he's starting from the best spot possible, right on pole, number one spot. So if there's ever a year that he could do it, you know, it'll be like the late Dale Earnhardt, where he won it after his 20th try. Kyle Busch is trying to accomplish that feat as well and win it for the first time. And I think it'd be a very popular win across the industry and certainly a popular win for the Vegas folk as well.
All right, like you mentioned, you can bet on other things like top cars, top Toyota. Do you have a bet here in that market?
Yeah, I really like a driver named John Hunter Nemechek to finish as the top Toyota. I've seen him around 17 or 18-1. So look for that when odds start to repopulate. John Hunter Nemechek actually has the best average finish in Daytona 500 history for drivers with at least three Daytona 500 starts. He's finished 5th, 7th, and 11th. And out of 11 cars, you know, that means if every driver were to have an equal chance of being the top Toyota, then they would all have fair odds at plus 1,000, 10-1, right? So this is a highly random race, so they all should be centered around that number. And John Hunter Nemechek has proven he should be right around that average number, if not a little bit better than average, based off his drafting track history. So 17, 18-1, too long there for JHN.
How about any of the other derivative markets? Top three, top 10, anything like that that you added to your card?
Absolutely. As far as Ryan Preece goes, I laddered top 10, top five, top three. But also, I really like three drivers that drive for Front Row Motorsports: Todd Gilliland, Noah Gregson, and Zane Smith. And these three drivers, like I said, they race for the same team, but that team, Front Row Motorsports, has a technical alliance with Team Penske, which is Joey Logano, Ryan Blaney, you know, the biggest names in the sport, NASCAR champions. When you have a technical alliance with the biggest names in the sport, you're getting their secrets. So they run really well at super speedways, Front Row Motorsports does. So look for those three drivers to get at least one of them into the top 10. All three of them you can find at 4-1 or longer. And all you need to do is hit one of the three to be profitable. And there's a chance two or three of them could finish inside the top 10. So I really like the Fords here. You're sensing a theme with Ryan Preece and the Ford, the Penske's Ford, and Front Row Motorsports Ford. I think Ford to win is another nice derivative market. You can get it like plus 170 to win the Daytona 500. So definitely like those Front Row Motorsports guys.
We've mentioned practice a couple of times here, and that the odds are off the board. How impactful will these practice runs be in terms of their impact on the odds once they're back up?
Absolutely nothing. They will have no impact, because super speedway practice is its own beast. What they're really trying to do in practice is just get a feel for the car in the draft. They're not trying to prove they have the ultimate speed, because you can't pull away from the pack at super speedway races. You will be stuck in the pack. So they're just working on getting the handling of their car. So practice data becomes useless as far as lap times and things like that.
I'm curious then, why pull off the odds during practice if they're useless? Is it just maybe could there be a wreck and a guy loses out on the field? Like, what would be the purpose of pulling them if the practice is useless in terms of the odds?
Yeah, there could be a wreck, and that would certainly change things. Okay. But also, it is just kind of standard practice, no pun intended there, because at all the other tracks, practice is massively important towards handicapping the race. So I think it's just a standard practice across the industry there, whether it's NASCAR or IndyCars or Formula One, the odds tend to come down during these practice sessions.
Last thing before I let you go, another driver I wanted to ask about, Brad Keselowski, broke his femur like a month ago. He's walking around with a cane that's got like sponsorship stickers all over it, by the way, but he's actually racing in this thing. Did that surprise you? And then to see him at an 18-1 shot, did that surprise you maybe even more?
It doesn't surprise me. Brad Keselowski is a tough son of a gun. He actually broke his ankle back in 2012 and came back the very next race and won. So, you know, he could do it again. I think a broken femur is certainly a little more of a impactful injury, but I mean, he just went out in his dual qualifying race last night where, you know, we had mini races, to set the starting order, and he was running top three, top four the whole race. So especially at a track like Daytona, where you just lay your foot on the gas pedal and you pretty much don't move off of doing that. You don't need to use the brakes really, unless there's a crash happening in front of you. He should be just fine.
Wild. Nick, thank you so much for the time and enjoy Daytona 500 weekend. Let's go.
Oh, I'm so excited for it. Like I said, Super Bowl of the year. Yep. And then we get into the meat of the NASCAR season. A lot more predictable races after this one.
No doubt about it. Nick Giffen, everybody, doing a great job over there at Action Network. Again, make sure you check out the Running Hot and Stacking Denny's podcast wherever you get your podcast. Did you see the Kozlowski story that he's on a family ski trip? He's dropping his daughter off to go skiing and slips on ice and broken femur. Wow. Boom. But 18-1 shot for the Daytona 500. We'll see if he can get it done. Okay, we got to step aside when we come back. Diving into a little baseball as we continue our play ball previews. Colorado Rockies on deck next.